okay, here I am.
All right.
I couldn't find any of my cords. I couldn't find my phone. I put my phone down while I was searching around for the one. I only have one cord that does a super important job. Mm-hmm. And I cannot do this podcast without that cord. You know?
And then I couldn't
find that cord.
My most important iPhone charging cord is like on the brink of collapse. It's like hanging by a little wire thread right now.
Why is it your most important one?
It's the bedroom charging one. It's the one that I use to charge it overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to accept in like 2019 that cords are ephemeral, that they wear out. I don't like that.
Well, you've been a Mac user from the very beginning. You have the official designation of an Apple early adopter.
Mm-hmm.
So you must have a lot of cords.
But they wear out and they get like, and then they're done. And like, I had a cache of old style phone charging cords, because my wife held on to her older style iPhone for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And then there was a brief window where I was just like, we didn't have that phone anymore, and I was just giving them away. People were like, hey, do you have this old phone? I was like, yes, I do. So that feels good. It feels good to like send them out into the universe to be used.
Yeah.
It feels terrible to just have them kind of lurking around in a drawer in case I need them one day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. A friend of mine like pulled out her box of cords because I was at her place and I didn't have a charger, and she's like, let's see if there's one in here. And I was suddenly seized with the anxiety of like, I need to get all my cords in a box before I die. That's what I felt. I was like, oh, all those cords that are just everywhere, jammed in drawers and like hanging behind the backs of desks. I need to put them in one place, maybe labeled, before I die.
Being in a mostly heteronormative relationship, I'm in charge of the electronics in our house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I need to buy phone cords for my wife's phone, I have to go on a little journey. Because I know her phone takes the same cord as my Kindle. So I go into my Amazon history and I see what Kindle that is. And then I figure out what charging cord that takes. And then I order that.
I have to say that, like, I've gone between Androids and Apples of various vintages my entire life. And, like, every time I pick up my phone, I'm like, oh, geez, which one is this one? Has it got the flat? Is it the flat one? No, it's the round one. Jeez. Like, you know, it just feels as if they keep changing it.
Yep.
And all my devices now use different charging cords, which is just, it's just super irritating.
Nikola Tesla at the turn of the century and before dreamed of wireless power.
Wireless.
Yeah.
No cords.
No cords. Just going to beam the power straight to everything.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about baking. Hello. My name is Richard Platel.
And I'm Liz Walker.
And this is the Bake Canadian Takeoff, a podcast about the Great Canadian Baking Show. And this week was the season 3 finale.
Here we are, at the end.
What kind of phone do you think each of the bakers has? I think Colin probably has an iPhone, and it's not the latest iPhone, but it's probably pretty up to date.
You mean like iPhone X?
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you think Natalia has?
I think Natalia has a pretty good Samsung phone. It's really big, though, and it's got, like kind of one of those purse cases that, like, holds, like, a lot of cards and stuff.
And why do you think it's big? So she can watch TV on it?
I don't know. That's just the sense I get. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, Skype calls home and stuff.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to be Skyping. You know, it's a funny thing. For me, I don't really ever want to Skype with anybody.
Nope, me neither.
But, like, that's not my preference.
I don't want to Skype to anyone, and I don't want to talk to my phone. I don't want to talk to my phone to tell it what to do.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And so, like, I will phone my parents, but it's not my preference to FaceTime or Skype with them.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many people who are walking around the city of Toronto, and they are, like, right now Skyping as they're walking around.
Yep.
And they're, like, in the grocery store, and they're, like, talking to their mom, and their mom is sitting on a couch, like, in some other far-flung part of the world. It goes completely beyond, like, how I interact with the phone completely.
Yeah, this is not interesting podcasting because we just completely agree here.
But, okay, but, like, the idea, like, I gotta work myself up a little bit if I'm gonna have a phone call.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I gotta make sure that there's, like, room in my schedule. I schedule phone calls.
Yeah.
I make myself a cup of tea ahead of time. I want to make sure that I'm comfy and I'm not going to be interrupted. Like, it's a whole deal. And then I see these other people and they're just walking around in the grocery store and they're chatting with their mom.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No big deal at all.
We're like that. I don't have that gene. I do not have the voice. I do not have the video calling gene.
No, not at all. Is it a generational thing?
I don't think
is
so.
Is it a far-flung thing?
That could be. It could be that. It could be like, this is the only way to talk to your family. But just wandering around talking to your parents? I just, no.
Yeah,
no, I need to prepare for that. I need to prepare for that. I need to, as you say, I need to be sitting down. Maybe have some notes ready.
And so then our final contestant, Jody.
Jody, what kind of phone does Jody have?
What kind of a phone does Jody have?
What do you think?
I feel like Jody's a very practical woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet maybe she's got, like, you know, like an old Android that's just a real workhorse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, one of those indestructible ones.
Yeah, and it may have a cracked screen, but it doesn't matter because she's not calling you. She's texting you to tell you that she's on your front porch.
Yep.
I'm here.
Yes.
Let me in. I've got cookies. That's how I would characterize Jody. Jody's just like, I'm already here.
That sounds right to me. So this is the finale of season 3.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I feel older.
Yes.
I feel tireder. My thoughts on the finale is I just feel a kind of... I feel deflated.
Really?
Yeah. How do you feel?
I feel elated. No.
Elated.
No, I thought that was a fun finale. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was anyone's game going in.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I don't feel deflated because of the performances in general. I'm just like, I guess we're not watching this anymore. I guess
you're deflated because it's done.
Yeah.
Don't be sad because it's over. Be happy because it happened.
Okay. Okay. It was a perplexing season sometimes.
Yes.
But there were things about it that I really, really, really enjoyed. And so, you know, I think it was a mixed bag. In a good way.
I'm going to say best season so far. I think they're getting better.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too, actually. I think Bruno is really coming into his own as the judge.
Yes.
As a judge. But
yes.
he's really the cornerstone of the judging. He is just so generous. And I was watching an old episode of British Bake Off last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one where Paul Hollywood gave a handshake for a showstopper. And I guess he never gives a handshake for a showstopper, so it was a really big deal. But then he turned around, and after he gave the first handshake, he gave a second handshake to the next baker. Maybe devaluing both handshakes by doing so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the, it cut away to him talking, like commenting on the showstopper itself. And he said, I'm disappointed in myself for having given the handshakes. Like he felt, it seemed to be like he felt that he had given something away that he shouldn't have.
Right.
By giving the Hollywood handshake to a showstopper, giving it twice. Just like, I don't know, devaluing his brand somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just, in contrast to that, I was thinking about Bruno, who is endlessly generous, fair, but he's just, he's a very generous, twinkling, kind of kind soul, who's, you know, willing to bring you through the mazes and of baking and reward you at the end.
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like you have managed to sneak away with something from under the dragon's hoard, you know?
Right, yeah. He wants you to succeed.
He wants you to succeed.
Yes.
Yeah, he's not there to block your way.
Right. So this week's signature challenge was to make a phrasery, which was a sitcom spinoff of Cheers, starring Kelsey Grammer.
You know, I think it was on for longer than Cheers.
But it was a spinoff. It was...
Yes, but it was a spinoff.
Yes.
Yeah. Beloved characters.
Yes. Fraiserie is a strawberry dessert, because fraise is French for strawberry, which is not something I realized until about three quarters of the way through this challenge. And I was very happy while the bakers were baking on this day that this was not the hottest day ever in the tent, as it usually seems to be.
That's right.
It was a...
Because they were making a mousse.
It was a reasonably temperatured day.
I've never made a mousse.
No?
No, but it seems like it's a very temperamental creature.
Yes.
Those big horns.
Those big horns.
Picks its way delicately through the ferns.
Always out on highways.
Mm-hmm.
I was driving, took my mom to Algonquin. To be accurate, my wife took my mom to Algonquin and I came along for the ride. but as we were driving up, you can turn into Algonquin Park Information Radio and... They gave a statistic, which I've always wanted, which was like, you see the sign saying like, moose, be careful, watch out, moose. But they actually put a number to it. They say like, you know, there were 24 moose accidents last year. And I'm like, okay,
whoa.
That's a lot.
Wow.
All right. Okay. I'll be careful.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, I had a very stiff drink while I was waiting for you to call. I had a stiff but dusty Manhattan.
Nice. I had three glasses of wine with dinner, so...
Wonderful, wonderful.
I'm if I forget words, that's why. Sorry.
So this is a ridiculously complicated dessert where you mush together strawberries and mousse and cake and whatever.
Yeah.
I thought Aurora was doing a really, really stellar job of being the audience surrogate as everyone was, like, unmolding their mousse, and, like, Natalia's was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And she was like... And then everyone else's was coming out, and she was like,
"Yeah, yeah." Caroline was there too. Yeah, they were framed in every shot, watching the unmolding where they finally take off the springform pan, and then they also take off the little piece of paper, the plastic that's keeping the whole thing together. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, "Rrr." I mean, they're channeling our anxiety. Bless them. It's got to be a hard job. Try to imagine how everyone is feeling at home right now.
This episode served a lot of Richard-centric flavors, I thought. A lot of, I like a lot of vanilla mousses and caramel flavors and pralines and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So some classic sweet tooth.
Yeah, so I appreciated that.
Flavors.
Jody made a mostly chocolate mousse with vanilla custard and a chocolate choux or a chocolate mousse. Natalia made matcha and I think vanilla and strawberry fraiserie.
It was the most spectacular looking, I thought.
Oh, no question.
That was very
bananas.
Elegant.
Yes.
Yeah, there was it was just it was it looked like something you would buy in a bakery.
Yeah, for sure.
For $50.
Yes. No, it looked like it was it looked like it was made by computers.
And what was Colin?
Colin was the French toast brunch one.
Oh yeah, that actually was also super amazing looking as well. Yeah. It was that's the one that I was sort of hankering for.
Yes.
I have never ever looked at a green dessert and thought I want to eat that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I've had green desserts and I've certainly enjoyed them, but no, they are not visually appealing.
And I don't think a matcha dessert has ever knocked it out of the park in any of the baking shows that I've ever seen.
No, although
like no one ever put down their fork and was just like, "Damn, I just want to reach for another bite of your tea flavored cake."
Yeah,
yum. Yeah. It's like just not ever even once.
You could do something really funny. You could be like, "I have a tea flavored cake and a cake flavored tea." I was happy that they weren't. I was happy that they didn't come up and were like, "What's matcha? What's that taste like? What's this thing I've never heard of?" This being season 3 and matcha having appeared.
Although, that's right. I'm going to come back to this when it comes to the showstopper, because we could have talked a little bit more about one of the ingredients.
Mm.
But we'll come back to that later. Put a pin in that. I want to talk about sometimes we do have to show some curiosity.
So in the judging of
I think Colin won the signature. Yeah.
Yeah. His was described as elegant, and he got a high five and a good job, buddy, from Bruno, which I think is fairly clear.
Well, the technical was also something ridiculous in French.
Yes.
Marjolaine.
Which was a... It's a layer cake. It's a decoise and hazelnut buttercream... praline buttercream and hazelnut layer cake.
Sure.
Sure. Why not?
Sure.
It's ridiculous to make pralines and then turn them into dust and then use that as an ingredient in a buttercream. That's ridiculous. Like, I can understand if you, like, work in a bakery and you have pralines anyway.
They're just kicking around.
You have, like, some scrap.
These are just going to waste.
Scrap shards that aren't good enough to sell. Sure, yeah. Then you make praline dust. But to make pralines and then turn them into dust and then use that as an ingredient, that is a bridge too far.
I am sorry, folks at the Canadian Baking Show, but you have gone too far this time. When did you realize that buttercream came in more than one variety, that variety being icing sugar and butter?
About an hour ago.
Like Swiss buttercream, Italian buttercream, right. French buttercream.
Yes.
These are all different things with different methods, different applications, different ways of achieving them.
This one had egg yolks in it.
That makes it a French buttercream.
Yes.
There was a brief
but important to me shot of Natalia's egg white separating safety, where she separates into a small bowl, and then once it's good and you know you don't have any yolk in there, then you put the egg white in the big bowl.
Oh yeah, that's smart, and I never do it. I throw caution to the wind. I'm like, I might just spoil these 8 egg whites that I have already prepared by my reckless pouring of another one. Like, yeah, absolutely. You're not supposed to do that. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you do that?
Tisk, tisk.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Good for her. I'm going to try and remember that the next time I have to crack 8 egg whites. What else happened?
I mean, nothing really happened in this challenge. They made the they made the mangoline, and everyone's was pretty good.
Jody's was slightly not as good as the others.
Her buttercream was described as weak, which I feel is damning. How can you face your husband and your children when your buttercream has been described as weak?
I don't know what weak means.
I think it didn't have enough praline flavor.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They mentioned that it... Well, this is the thing. So, like, a French buttercream, in particular, is useful because it has egg yolk in it, so that it's got... you can do a lot of piping with it, but I don't think that... It wasn't used for piping. I think it was just used to sandwich the flavors together?
Yep.
The dacquoise, is that right?
That's correct, yes.
So...
There was a little bit of piping on the top, but that just to hold your hazelnut. But yeah, mostly it was filling.
I don't know.
She burned her first batch of sugar, I think, that was in this challenge.
Mm.
So she might have been a bit gun shy and like not caramelized her pralines enough the second time, leading to a weak praline flavor, a lack of caramelization flavor. Natalia's was described as clean and nice with a good ganache, but with a waxy buttercream.
But it took first place.
So
waxy buttercream. It's okay. Yeah. This was not a challenge that I wanted to eat.
I did. I was pretty interested in this. I like, these are flavors I like.
But I wouldn't ever, if I saw this and be like, yeah, you want a slice of marjolaine? I'm like, eh. No. I'm good. I think. Yeah, I just can't imagine craving it. But that has been a repeated complaint of mine this season.
Yeah. Unappetizing bakes?
Just not things that I can imagine wanting to bake, because it's a lot. I think a lot of challenging bakes come from a tradition where they are difficult to achieve and they are very precise in how they're executed, because they were done according to a tradition. They're coming from a certain historical context, so they were done for like saints' feast days,
right,
or they were done in this particular region, and they were done a particular way, and so they are as much an emotional event as an eating event, right?
Right.
And when you cut some of that emotional context out of it, I'm not as interested in it.
Right, yeah.
That's just, like, I would either need to hear more about this cake to find out why there's a praline in the buttercream.
Right, yeah.
Because otherwise, I'm just left scratching my head and thinking, I don't know, you don't need that.
Right.
Leave it out.
Right, as you say, is it like a Saint's Day feast or something where you also made pralines?
Mm-hmm.
Or the week after you made pralines, you make this one.
Right, exactly. What are we going to do with all these pralines? All this dust from the pralines? I have an idea.
I was having a little fantasy time today, and I was looking at the Aga Stove catalog online.
Oh my God!
Do you know about Aga Stoves?
Yes.
It's a big,
but please tell me.
Aga stove is a big, giant, like, piece of cast iron that's about the size of a car, and it's kind of traditional British, French stove.
I think you see it in British TV shows.
It's a British stove, and it's,
I think it's handmade by dwarves.
Yes, in the mines of Moria, mm-hmm. And it's always on. It's always to temperature. You use it to heat your house and cook your bread. And it is like you start with an Aga stove and then you build a British manor house around it. And again, it is the focus of the house. This is for baking a loaf of bread in first thing in the morning and then starting your stew and, you know, your Yorkshire pud and everything. And it just
making
it is
your
just
sacrifices to
making
Freya.
Making your sacrifices to Freya. Exactly. And it is the continuous feast. It is like always going.
What is the fuel in an aga?
Well, you can run an aga stove. I learned today on natural gas, oil, or electricity. But if you're running that on electricity, you're just burning money.
Jeez. Yeah, you might as well just pile your money in there and set it on fire.
Actually, yeah, it runs on either natural gas, oil, electricity, or cash.
You know, I was expecting you to say wood. Like, I was expecting it to be like something that you would like pile wood into mm-hmm. it, and then mm-hmm. like a traditional. So, well, that's the why. Cause I think an aga stove is actually bigger than your kitchen. I've been in your kitchen.
Oh yes, yeah. No, this was pure fantasy times. This was like, what, you know, what might it be like?
And how much they cost?
They are the smallest aga stove, which is like kind of like cute and small, is 5,000 pounds.
That's like a condo version, huh?
Yeah. And then they go up from there.
And you can, the sky's the limit.
You can basically spend as much as you want on a stove.
Yeah, I bet you could get an aga that's like inlaid with rubies if you want.
Yes, the aga.
They'll make that for
aga
you.
Aga Khan's aga stove. Ba da ba ba da ba. So what, baking? The showstopper.
What are we here for?
Was to make a pièce montée, which is a bake-off classic.
Pièce de montée.
It's a tower of profiteroles and cream puffs and royal icing and cookies and cake.
A cake, yeah. It's like all the assembled things assembled to make a thing.
When they announced this challenge, I started chanting CN Tower, CN Tower, CN
yes!
Tower, and Colin did not disappoint. I was very happy to see that.
Yeah, totally. It was really nice. It was really nice to stop pretending that Toronto isn't the center of the universe for once.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, can we just say it? Can we just say it?
Let's just admit it, people.
It's on the money. It's not on the money. Yeah.
Sorry, Western alienists. Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
And also super excited about that because he was making a Hong Kong tea cake.
Yes.
And I have had this tea. So when he said that, I was like, oh, geez. It's, oh, crap. Because it is a super, 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 super strong black tea that is then sweetened to within an inch of its life. And a whole lot of evaporated milk is poured in. So it's got, like, weird metallic flavors. It's super sweet. It's got, like, a dense consistency. It will melt out the bottom of a styrofoam cup. It's like the pot of black tea sits on the stove all day long.
Right.
My husband was sitting next to me and he said, you know, they call this pantyhose tea. And I said, what? And he showed it to me. Apparently in like Hong Kong or in traditional Hong Kong restaurants where it's served, the ancient old black tea is in a it's like hung in the pot in a tied off pair of pantyhose.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't really know why, but it is. So it's got like a real story, and I was super disappointed that they didn't talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because that's an exciting idea, and it's got like a real story to it, and I was really curious to like how is that going to taste, because it's got a very strong flavor. This is not Earl Grey tea.
Right.
People. Yeah. You can't make muffins out of this. You can't make What are those little cookies? You can't make what do you call them?
Macaroons?
You can't make a macaron from Hong Kong tea.
Yeah, we could have used a bit more description during the judging.
But anyway, Colin did a totally ambitious, completely shameless sand tower.
Lots of nice sugar work that they didn't really focus on, but we know from our Bake Off experience that that's a part of a Piedmont experience.
That's right. And so, let's see. Jody was working on a
Eiffel Tower,
a classic.
Yep.
Thank goodness they built the Eiffel Tower, because I don't know what people would make a pièce de monte out of if that wasn't there.
I mean, Arc de Triomphe.
Oh yeah, that seems like a really easy one. that's a good idea. They should do that. What's that tower in Kuala Lumpur?
Oh, the Petronas Towers.
They could try that.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm. It's got that little bridge between for stability.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, you're thinking of the Burj Khalifa.
Oh, am I?
Yeah. That's the tall one. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You get that pyramid building in San Francisco.
Yep.
I think that's owned by Salesforce now. Does it have to be something that's like a man-made structure, or could it be a natural structure?
They said landmark.
A landmark.
Yeah, so you could do an Ayers Rock. You could do an Uralu.
Okay, nice. I think Ayers Rock would be pretty rad, actually.
You could maybe start out trying to make something else and accidentally make an Ayers Rock.
Yes.
So Jody had tragedy. She dropped a cookie and broke a cookie, so she was missing a panel.
Yeah, and it just seemed like she was kind of behind on things generally. Yeah. I'm not really sure where her cake went. Yeah, I mean, it was huge, though. It seemed to be almost as tall as she was.
Yep.
I don't ever want to tell somebody to scale back their ambitions, ever. But ever. I guess you just lean into that. You lean into that fall.
Lean into that fall, yep. Well, royal icing works wonders.
It's true.
In the judging, it was described as ambitious.
Yep.
And she had a perfect shoe.
Oh, nice.
And Natalia, being Natalia, did a giant, pretty communist-looking statue.
Yep.
Called the Motherland Monument, which was amazing.
It was pretty great.
It was show-stopping. Yeah. That's show-stopping. That's, I mean, come on. What more can you say?
I think that Soviet monumentalism actually really lends itself very well to baking.
Huh.
Yeah. Who knew?
But yes, if you are making an enormous landscape dominating statue out of concrete, it is possible to reproduce that in miniature in pastry.
Very successful.
Yes. And gosh, that seemed pretty successful to me.
It sure did.
And in the final analysis.
Oh, wait. Right. I've got one more thing to say.
Yes.
There's only one thing that I thought was missing from Colin's CN Tower.
What was that?
A tiny drake!
Yes. Yes.
That would have been so funny. Anyway, we cannot mourn what did not appear.
No. If you're eating
but
this.
But we can think about it.
If you're eating this, it's already too late.
So, what happened in the end?
In the end, Natalia's just constant stunning performances led her to, of course, be crowned the greatest baker in Canada. And thus the world.
She, you know, it was nice to be reminded that she was Star Baker 3 times.
Yes, yep.
I mean, out of 8 episodes, that is almost...
That is more than a third, almost a half.
Almost, I mean, that is almost a half, because, like, the last one doesn't count.
Right.
So out of 7 episodes, she was nearly half the time.
Yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah, Natalia took it, and she deserved it.
Immigrants coming to our country, taking our jobs. So that's good. That I mean, it is not the person who was best and who was always best won, which is right and proper, but narratively unsatisfying.
It is. It's a little bit, there was no dramatic. It wasn't a dramatic finale.
No.
It had a certain amount of inevitability to it. But it was fun to watch. It was really nice to see Colin and Jody and Natalia all do their best.
Yes.
They were really consistent, great bakers.
Yep.
For the entire season. I really enjoyed Colin's shirt with the tigers on it.
Oh, me too, yeah.
I really thought that that was a tribute to Dan Levy.
Me too.
Much missed.
This year we get a bonus Christmas episode with some returning bakers.
Yeah. Who won the first season?
Oh my god, that was so long ago.
Right? Like 100 years.
Yeah.
Let's look into the archives. I'm going to see if I can blow all the dust off this book. Oh, let's see.
Oh, Sabrina. She was in the Robin Hood commercials.
That's right. Sabrina from Montreal.
Yes.
And, Andre.
Yes.
Who's the other winner?
Yes.
I wonder if he'll be there.
Hmm.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
What if he comes in with an eye patch or something? I don't know, something that speaks to an exciting year that he's lived.
No, totally. I kind of imagine that he has maybe spent the past year mastering some other skill, like
right.
the loot.
Right, yes.
Right? Or spelunking, I don't know. You know, he might be missing a leg.
I can hold my breath for 20 minutes.
Right. I became a master pole diver in the past year. It's been pretty great. Who knows, right?
Right.
No, I think that's all the thoughts I have about this.
Okay. Well, then we should wrap it up.
I think so.
Thank you for joining us for season 3 of The Baked Canadian Takeoff. Our theme music is Dog Politics by Elvis Herod. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Baked Canadian. And we will be back next week to talk about the Christmas episode. Or is it the week after? I can't remember.
I don't remember. I think it's next week.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Okay, yay!
Yay, cool.